So we got a bunch of girls, man. Where's the guys?
Thanks.
Oh, there's some hiding behind there. Hiding behind the girl. Nice. It's hard for me to get that out of my mind. I'll try not to say anything bad. You can sit down if you want, Richard, you know. So. That was visions of sugar plums dancing in your head or something. I have visions of Bugattis dancing in my head. I mean, I didn't think, I don't know, you know, that was a very soul-moving event to me. I know it's hard to understand for you girls doing it, but that is no different than going to the Louvre. And no, it isn't. The artwork, the extremity of the ability of man to be creative was represented as much there as in a Rembrandt. I mean, I mean, to watch a fully street legal car and absolutely beautiful, not some scabbed together pig, but some work of art car do 200 and almost 250 miles an hour going through in front of you is just, that's like, you know, it was not lusting. I was not doing it. It's just a very soul moving event. And, you know, some can't understand it. Just like I can't understand looking at Picasso and getting excited on any means, you know. Even a Monet is a freak, you know. Whatever. So Rembrandt's, now that's cool. But whatever. You know, but it is artwork. You know, that's an extreme thing. I mean, we just watched cars do 250 miles an hour. Over 20 cars did over 200 miles an hour. On a public road. You know? I have to say that there's, I've always had this dichotomy in me. And the two things that really stir my heart, that really stir emotion in me, are being high up in the mountains and hearing a really fine running motor. And we certainly have the really fine running motor part. You know, we were fairly high in the mountains, you know. I mean, you know, certainly better than the salt flats of Utah or something. You know, it's incredible to watch a car go by at almost 250 miles an hour. I mean, again, it's very hard to understand if you don't understand architecture, if you don't understand, to look at what does it take to build a cathedral, or what does it take to build some amazing feat of engineering. You know, it's hard to appreciate. There wasn't a tenth of the people there that appreciated what was going on. You know, not their fault necessarily, just like I don't know why, you know, some art I do not appreciate. You know, I do not find attractive and do not appreciate. But that's some art I appreciated. You know, it wasn't just the beauty of the cars. I mean, there was, you know, American muscle isn't quite so artful. Is Italian, never has been. But as far as the mechanics of it, it's just unbelievable. You know, to make a car, you know, to like think a little bitty six-cylinder motor that ought to be putting out about 150 horse, put out 1,200 and run a car 237 miles an hour in a Datsun, who would have thought, you know? I mean, that was an amazing thing. So if things come out of my mouth today that are not necessarily here, I believe that God is a creator. No, I don't believe. I know that, right? I mean, God is a creator. In a lot of things that are created, You know, one of the more stirring things to me that I love in life is wildflowers. You know, and to me, wildflowers are always, you know, I just laugh. You know, why would God have taken so much time to make something so extremely, exquisitely beautiful that is here today and gone tomorrow? You know, I mean, it says, you know, didn't need to do it that way. You know, but he did it that way because he's a creator. Because he's a creator of beauty. He's the creator of, and so there is a side that is true, that being creative is representing the character and nature of our God. That doesn't, you know, so I'm sure God laughs at the Bugattis in a sense. He created light, by the way. A little faster, a little more complex, you know, doing it. I mean, he did the flood with the side effect, knowing full well it'd create tremendous petroleum reserves so that they could burn a gallon or two a mile and do that kind of mileage, do that kind of speed. Knew that the internal combustion engine would be in it. I mean, I'm sure it's on some level something like us watching a kid take their first three pedals on a bicycle, you know, and the kid's going, "Dad, do you see me? You know what I did? You know, I just did this extreme event. Did you see that?" You know, and his parents were trying to go, "Yeah, that's good, honey. You know, that's good. You did three pedals, you know, on the thing." I'm sure that's like God watching the Bugattis on some level, you know, looking, going, "Yeah, you know, that's cool, you guys, you know, but, you know, I created light. You know how fast that goes? You know, doing it." But there's a side of it that's always tragic, I think, much like the cathedrals. You know, the cathedrals are absolutely, I've only seen pictures, absolutely amazing building. My wife's seen them some, and she's tried to talk me, our whole marriage, into wanting to go to Europe to go back and look at architecture. And back in the day, we had the opportunity and the ability to go, and almost did. And I have to say, it would break my heart to look at the cathedrals. You know, because they were created in the name of God, with oppression from a Catholic Church that was oppressive to the people and very confused about what this says. And it was generations of a dominant, controlling, oppressive religion in Catholicism that created these amazing works of architecture. That's man. That's man and his fallen nature, you know. And yesterday was certainly on some level, man, there's those mixed feelings of my soul's just being stirred to its depth, and then I'm thinking of brothers or sisters in Uganda and thinking, what if I was talking on the phone with one of them saying, "What are you doing right now? Well, what are you doing right now? You know, what is your life about?" You know, and they say, "Well, I'm ducking bullets, you know, and they're coming to take our village and kill us and rape us. And, you know, and I'm watching Bugattis go down the road at 250 miles an hour. 46, just for the record, 246 miles an hour. But such is the nature of the dichotomy of man created in the image of God, but man refusing to acknowledge God as God. You know, there's a aspect of this world that's amazing in God's creation, and there's an aspect that's just tragic in its fallen nature. So I don't know quite where I lie on it. I guess Jeremy bought my ticket, so I didn't spend too much money on it doing it. I rode a bus. I was ecologically friendly, wasn't I? So to get there. So it was a sweet experience and good to hang out. I just told Heather that wasn't sure which was more impressive. There's times there was some amazing cars going by, but then I watched her deal with a handful of little kids in the hot sun that were no place to sit and were pretty good. I mean, were really good. No whining, no fussing. And I mean, it was about hot. It's about cookies sitting there doing it. And so that was cool. So, excuse my, I wouldn't want to say degeneracy, digression, I guess, right? Okay. I'm a bit distracted. I still see this carbon fiber Bugatti going by at 246. No, that one didn't, but that one hit 240, 241 and went, oh my gosh. I mean, if that isn't somewhat of a lifelong, soul inspiring, you missed what was going on. I mean, that's a deal. So, let's pray. God, you are the creator. You're mighty. There was nothing yesterday seen that was not created by your hands. I don't know how it works. Nobody quite does, but you hold the molecules and electrons together that form every composite and medium and gas, whatever was necessary to watch the displays that happened yesterday. You are God. In fact, you held the earth underneath us together. I thank you for that privilege, as Jeremy prayed, of living in the place we do. God, I ask you to inspire our souls to worship our Creator, not to be caught up in the exaltation of humans, not to be caught up in the achievements of man. It's how man always does, you know. They created the Tower of Babel, whatever that looked like, and in order to be closer and more like you and you, and you said, this isn't going to work. God, I thank you though that, I thank you for the creativity. I thank you for aesthetics. I thank you for wildflowers. Wildflowers are just as magnificent as the Bugattis. And I thank you for that. I thank you that you are not a simple God, but you're a complex God. I thank you that you are, we will never run out of intense, lifelong, full throttle pursuit of you. We will never come to an end. We will never come to complete understanding. We will never get bored. The deeper we go, the more intense and beautiful and extreme it gets. And I thank you that your nature and your character is that. And in that process, you don't remain distant. I thank you that you want to be our dad. Teach us a little bit more what that looks like, please, and how to get along in the process. Amen. There's a couple things in Matthew 18 that I want to talk about again. I don't know. Excuse me for being somewhat consumed in 18, but that's been a very moving thing to my soul. I mean, it's been a deepening and deepening and deepening process. I really believe that you know, here's Jesus who transfigures right before this act. I mean, in that, to Peter and John and James had to be a profoundly amazing thing. I mean, I don't know what you would say. He went full nuclear, you know. I mean, he went full, just radiated in a way that was completely supernatural to them. You know, it was like, oh my. I mean, they were terrified, fell down on their faces, hit their faces, went, oh my. You know, it wasn't cool, let me touch you, you know, or let me shake your hand. I mean, they were terrified, said. Because it was such an amazing thing when he transfigured to a, what I suppose we will be like someday. We will exist in an eternity, into a different state. But here he is showing him what it looks like to be in this, in the kingdom of heaven, in the kingdom of God, and yet being here on earth, Peter says to him, you know, they were arguing about what would it be. I mean, they were having a... I do believe that the primary purpose of 18 and the point of 18 is speaking about those who, when it speaks of children, are speaking about not just young in the Lord, but those who have truly taken on the nature and character of a child towards their father, and that they are willing to not be self-defenders. They are willing to be not self-sufficient. They are willing to be dependent on their dad. And in that dependency puts a level of vulnerability in our lives that puts us at risk. And that's what he means, that I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And that's a huge statement that I guess in the last month or so has been daily just weighing on my mind. Okay, what does that mean? I mean, it's a big statement. Unless you become converted, unless you are changed, unless you are transformed and become like children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. That should go, well, what, I mean, if that doesn't inspire a, what does that mean, and how does that look in my life, and what does that mean to me, we don't care about entering the kingdom of heaven, because he says if you don't, you're not. So that's a big deal. And to me, it's been a, you know, I felt in some ways, more like a little boy with God than I've ever felt in the last month and a half. You know, doing that. That taking on that, you know, that he's my dad. I mean, Paul says that the Spirit within us, we are allowed to have such a relationship with God that we can call him Abba Father. We can call him Daddy. I mean, Daddy is big. You mean that? This is an intimate relationship with God Almighty. And yet without losing any sight of the fact of who our dad is. I mean, that's the profound nature of it. We live in such a muddled, mixed up view of what a dad is and what a father is in this world. You know, we count it as normalcy that children are disrespectful to their parents. You know, we count it as normalcy that kids are rebellious. I mean, what do we say about teenagers? That's just teenagers being teenagers, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, it's a completely perverse understanding of God's intention, so much so that we have a very hard time wrapping our heads around what it means to be a child. Because we accept rebellion. We accept disrespect. We accept not honoring your father and mother. All of us have spoken to our moms and dads in ways that was disrespectful, right? And to the most of us, I would go to the extent of probably suggesting that most of us, that is just the way we always spoke. You know, that there was always a level of disrespect shown. And, hi Tara. And I would suggest that the familiarity with that, the acceptance of that is, it completely convolutes what he's talking about unless you become as a child. Most little children speak disrespectful. All little children by nature will speak disrespectful. All little children by nature will not honor their mother and father. And this is a process of teaching that is our responsibility as parents. Okay? That to teach a child the correct relationship between a child and their parents, a child and their father, a child and their father and mother, to teach that honoring and that respect is the primary, not to make good citizens, not to, you know, what is the primary goal of most parents these days? Stated. That my children have it better off than I did. You know? That my children are able to create more wealth than I did. You know? Why do we relentlessly push college so our children could be better citizens and wiser and understand things more and, you know, fulfill this quest and develop this quest for knowledge and understanding, and so they can be more compassionate and caring people in the world and care more about other people. How often do you see that promoted, you know, in it? What is it? So that you can make wealth, you know, so you can be more successful, so you won't have to work as hard as I did. I mean, it's a pretty messed up deal. That what is the purpose of parenting, and what are we trying to achieve? You know, how many parents are truly understand that from the time that child is born, my duty, my responsibility, my objective, you know, is to teach this child what a right relationship with God looks like. I mean, that is your purpose, by the way. That is your objective. That is what it should be as a parent. Okay? Wealth? Yeah, that's an amazing thing. You know, Jesus said it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to get through the eye of a needle. Why are we all trying to make our kids wealthy? You know, it's an amazing, convoluted perspective on parenting. And when it comes to being, I mean, we might as well say, heroin is the most euphoric feeling you'll ever have. You want some? You know? I mean, don't be lifetime addicted to it, you know. Just do it for a while and then don't, because otherwise you'll be really addicted, and just do it when you want to. I mean, we're perverse in our understanding of what we are trying to. I mean, I'm not saying that wealth is inherently wrong, because wealth is not inherently wrong. Wealth is incredibly dangerous. Incredibly dangerous. Jesus said what Jesus said, and he was not confused. That child, you guys. that kid, do not let him go down that career path, man. I mean, he is real capable. So, back to the focus here, you guys. Focus for a minute, okay? I'll try to get short. So in this concept, let me take a couple points here and go, because the two points I want to talk about a little bit, I want us to refocus and think about, is this concept of, he says, unless you are converted and become like children. Again, that goes completely contrary to everything we raise our children to be in our culture, generally speaking. We want them to be independent. We want them to be, you know, determine their own life. We want to give them the means to do whatever they want. We want them to be wealthy. I mean, how many parents truly send their kids these days to college and push college so hard for any other reason than making money? Not very many. It's all about making money. You know, unless you're a college professor already, and then you're already distorted in your mind probably. And you want them to understand academia, but we can see how well that's gone for us in our culture. You know, academia is a mess, you know, in doing it. Becoming it converted, becoming as a child, means that we become vulnerable, okay? And that's a really important baseline to understand 18. That means that we become vulnerable. And none of us want to do that. All of us figure survival skills and try to learn survival skills to not be vulnerable, to try to be in control of our environment around us so we're not invulnerable, to try to be tough or strong or hidden or protected in whatever way to not be vulnerable and exposed. And God said that you're not going to enter the kingdom of heaven like that. That's huge. You're not going to enter the kingdom of heaven unless you are truly vulnerable from the depths of your soul, unless you're willing to live truthfully from your heart, unless you are willing to be submissive to the authority I've put over you, not self-defensive. I wish I could share on a detailed level. We don't have time to do it, but I had a pretty profound thing happen to me this week in, how do I do the short version? Yeah. I, I ended up hitting a dog, okay, on Thursday. And it was alright. It was a fat lab. It bounced. Yeah. So it was in a circumstance that has been a problem for the last 15 years, and it's driving through this section of Warm Springs outboard ranch where people believe that thoroughfare, which goes to anywhere in Idaho on a road, is somehow their personal bike path and their personal walking path. And they're terrible. It doesn't matter how slow you're going. They yell at you. They let their children play in the street, you know, ride their bicycles down the street. They go down the street with their dogs. I'm okay with all that. Okay. I'll try to be careful in doing it, you know, when I go through there, but don't yell at me when I'm driving 15 miles an hour, you know, doing it. And that was really the case. So we've got a 15-year feud with David going through there, you know. And I admit, 15 years ago, I might have driven through there a little faster than I should. But for the most part, not. I'm always saying, I don't drive unsafe, okay? For the most part, I don't drive unsafe. That might look different to some people, okay? I don't drive. I'm a defensive driver. I do it. So if I'm going through there at 50 miles an hour, I'm probably safer than driving through it. And 50 miles an hour is necessarily more dangerous than the 15 miles an hour I was doing when I hit the dog, okay? But the bottom line, it's been a long-term feud with some people in there. They always yell, and I stop and say, is there something wrong, you know, doing it? And it's been an ongoing thing. And they did the same thing again, and yelling and screaming, doing it, and I was down to 15 miles an hour, and I'm going, you know, and I'm looking, and their dog running up ahead, not paying attention, boom, jumps right in front of my car, and I hit the brakes, and the dog rolls down the road, bounces a few times, and flips doing it, and, you know, the guy comes over and smacks my car as hard as he could hit it, my window, my thing, and starts yelling and screaming, throwing up his hands, and I'm thinking, Jesus, what would you do? Well, I'm thinking, Dad, what do I do here? I know how I'm being inspired in my flesh, and it probably isn't the right response. This is happening pretty quickly as I'm taking my glasses off and getting out of the car and going, God, please, I want to do the right thing here. Kind of hoping he would continue his aggression, but in my flesh, I'm sorry. But going, no, God, I want to do the right thing. You know, I'm sorry I hit your dog, you know, I'm doing 15, you know, I mean, the guy, his responsibility is to control his dog. It's a main road, okay? It's not, I didn't do anything wrong. I slowed down to 15 miles an hour. Done nothing wrong. For him to come up and slam my door and start, long story short, I I'm calling the cop. He reported me for reckless driving, you know, hitting his dog. Fortunately, I called the cop same time, and said, here's the other side of the story. You know, here's what's going on doing it. Unfortunately, I got the same cop that, I don't know how many of you heard the story, that came to the fire pit, you know, last fall, you know, that was a little Western, you know. So we had to have a little continual dialogue about things. But the sweet thing was, I'm going, God, I want to do the right thing. I mean, I spent a couple hours. I mean, my heart's beating. I'm, thinking I need to respond right here, you know, doing it. And, the sweet thing was, I finally said, Dad, you know, what God wants is, what did God want me to do in this situation? Okay? God wanted me to back up. Move along just like a little boy. He wanted me to move around behind my dad and go, all right, Dad, you deal with it. Right? And that's what God wanted me to do. You know, my response really wasn't fear. It was other emotions that were I was trying to deal with at the time. But it was, all right, God, I need you to deal with this, man. I mean, it couldn't have been a worse person. I mean, this guy, it's whatever. Couldn't have been a worse person for that to happen to. this guy has written blogs about me driving, dude. I mean, it's stupid, out of control. And here I did hit his dog, you know, on doing it, you know. I just fully characterized what he's been screaming about forever, you know. So I'm thinking, you know, why God? I mean, of all the times and places of, you know, why would this happen? You know, I don't understand why this would happen. I need your help. I need your help, man. Need your help to, because this could go really bad. I mean, next time through Board Ranch, there could be an armed militia standing in the road. Because, I mean, when he's screaming, the dog, the people are running out from the yard, yelling at me, screaming already doing it. I mean, it was going, I didn't do anything, you know, on it. So, I tell you what, it was just such a sweet vision of what it's supposed to look like. Because Jesus says here, whoever humbles himself as his child, is obedient, is submissive to my authority, who goes and grabs my leg and hides behind it, okay? He's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. That doesn't mean we don't deal with things. I'm not giving you an out. I'm dealing with what you're supposed to deal with. Dump trash and you're supposed to do it. Deal with conflict and you need to deal with it. I'm not saying that, okay? I'm not saying to avoid conflict. What I'm saying is here, do we trust our daddy? And do I trust daddy to fight my fights for me? Whoever receives one child in my name receives me. Whoever takes this child and go, you know, that little child standing there, and you got a bully who's going to pick on him, and dad goes like this. And the bully, what's the bully do? Runs, right? Runs. And that's what he's saying here, okay? Whoever humbles himself as a child, he's greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name. What does it mean in my name? What it means in my name is, that's your dad. What it means is, God is your father. Okay? And pardon me, I'll say it again. I said it once. Is a badass. Okay? Alright? Oh, David, that's strong language. Oh, really? You want to hear the strong language? Because he wrote down the strong language. He said the strong language. It doesn't mean much in our culture, but he says, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it is better for him that a heavy millstone be hung around his neck and he be drowned in the depths of the sea. It's better for him if that happened. Right? So what's God going to do to him? He says that's better. It'd be better for you if somebody took a heavy millstone, inescapable, can't get away from it. The Jews were somewhat seen to be afraid of the sea. They weren't seafarers. They were fishermen, but only in the Sea of Galilee, okay? They didn't fish in the ocean, even though they had a long stretch of the Mediterranean that belonged to them. They weren't seafarers. They never really went. The Jews didn't. They were somewhat afraid of the sea doing it. I don't know, afraid. I wouldn't want to necessarily say that about individuals, but they didn't go into the sea. So for Jesus to say it was better for a millstone to be hung around your neck and you'd be thrown in the depths of the sea. Is that a dad saying, don't mess with my kid? Don't mess with my kid. Okay? You don't have to worry, kid. Don't mess with my kid. Alright? That is a dad saying that very strongly. What was sweet about to finish my story, and I almost want to play that message. I got a message on my phone. What? I got a message on my phone that was sweet. Here's this kid who just freaked out. I don't know where this came from. He leaves a message and goes, Mr. Rosser, I'm very sorry for the way I acted. And use the words, he goes, I was wrong. You know, what I did is wrong. How I reacted is wrong. And this is an adult, you know, mid-20s guy goes, I hope you forgive me. You know, for doing what I did. I mean, Dad, thanks. Right? I mean, Dad, thanks. You know, how would it have gone if I decided I was going to teach the child the thing he needed to be taught about respect? Instead, it was God taught him. God somehow moved his soul. I was just flabbergasted. I had to listen to it about 5 times, you know? Did you really say that? What's that? I didn't react. It was all pretty Western at the time. The streets were collapsing in. Everybody was screaming. The dog's boom, hauling down the road. You know, so I'm going, oh, the dog's fine, you know, doing it. I'm, you know, on it. But the people were yelling. His wife and him were yelling. They were throwing their arms up there, screaming, yelling, saying all kinds of stuff that wasn't nice. We have to trust. God says, okay, you need to be his children. You need to be, humble yourselves as children. And I'll be your dad. Okay? I will take care of you. Right? I will protect you and do that. And the stumbling part is he says, but whoever causes one of these little ones to stumble, to believe in me to stumble, is better for him that a heavy millstone be hung around his neck and he be drowned in the depths of the sea. Try to think about that. Try to rephrase that and something makes sense to us. Okay? We don't even know what a millstone is, you know? Okay? But that is not an idle threat. Is it a threat? It is a threat. Okay? It is a threat. I will kick your fanny. That's a really strong way of saying, I will kick your fanny. Okay? No, it's not just I will kick your fanny. I will drown you in the ocean. It would be better for you if you were drowned in the ocean, because what I'm going to do to you would be worse than that. If you cause one of them. That's a big statement. That is the God that we serve that says, let me be your dad. Let me be your dad. And whoever, but woe to the world because of stumbling blocks. He says, now I know you guys, that being vulnerable in this world, That not being self-defensive, not being self-promoting. Humility is different. You know, we tend to think of humility in this world. We say, humble himself. We tend to think of humility, well, I'm not very good at playing the guitar. I'm not very good at painting. I'm not very good at playing sports. I'm not very good at, oh, what a humble guy. That's not humble. That's a fairly self-absorbed egotist, okay? Because it's still egocentric. It's still thinking about yourself. It's still I. You know what humility is? Selflessness. That's what humility is. Humility is not being consumed with me. We have a very false sense of humility. The church is the worst, pardon me. Organized religion is the worst. What is it? What is its greatest sign of humility? I'm just a sinner. That is not humility. That is not humility. Jesus died to set you free from your sin. Are you going, in the Bible, if you have accepted that, if you've appropriated that, if you've been baptized in the death and resurrection of Jesus, if you've been baptized into that, you are no longer, you are called a saint, not a sinner. To say that I am born again, to say that I have died to myself and I am living for Jesus, and to not identify as I am a saint, set free from that bondage, to identify as I am a sinner, is to spit in Jesus' face. Okay? That is not humility. But in our culture, in our world, now, the truth is, do we need to recognize we're a sinner? Absolutely essential to realize our need for a Savior. If I don't recognize that I have spit in God's face, I have spit in Jesus' face, to say to spit in Jesus' face is what we've all done. To mock the cross, to belittle what Jesus did on the cross, to belittle what God the Father has done to create restitution so that we can be His children. I mean, that is profound. The end part of this chapter makes that pretty clear about forgiveness and about the master forgiving his slave. Okay? It says you can't do it. Remember, we talked about it last week. You've got a debt of $10 million back 2,000 years ago. It's a big sum of money. And then what happens? You're sold as a slave. Everything you have is sold as a slave. You're thrown into prison. Oh, you're going to make a lot of money there, aren't you? To pay back your debt. What is his purpose? What's he saying? Can't do it. There is only one hope. You cannot pay your debt. You cannot pay the debt you owe. And we need to understand that debt. There's only one way. That's asking for forgiveness. That's on the benevolence and love and mercy of God, of our Master. We cannot pay it back. Jesus was making it very clear. This is a debt you cannot pay back. Irreconcilable on your own. The only hope you have is the mercy and grace of God towards it and asking for forgiveness. That is the debt that we're owed. Jesus has done this. Jesus has made a way so that we can be right with our Daddy. So that we can be right with God the Father. In that process of vulnerability, in that process of selflessness, in that process of, I'm not going to be self-defensive, okay? I'm not going to be self-protective. I'm not going to be self-exaltive. I'm not going to bring attention to me. My purpose is to pour out, not be an intaker. My purpose is to be an outpourer. My purpose is to pour out and love others. That is what my purpose is to be. In that process, there will be stumbling blocks and things will come against us. Stumbling blocks the aspect of that I really want to consider and I want you to consider. Woe to the world because of stumbling blocks, for it is inevitable that stumbling blocks will come, but woe to the man through whom the stumbling block comes. And he goes on to speak about the severity of getting rid of it. When we think of stumbling blocks, I was talking to one of the guys that's on the drug coalition. The whole purpose of the rally is to raise money for the drug coalition. The rally's doing really good. As far as I'm concerned, the drug coalition sucks. Okay? It's not doing very well. You know? 4 years, we made a lot of money. Last year, they raised over $1 million. The drugs went down this year. They'll make more this year. Well, $2,000 a run for those cars to run. Plus people in there doing it. I mean, it's a big deal. Where does that money go? Last year, I think they said they raised $100,000 went to Drug Coalition or something even. 10% by the time everybody got their cut. I'm not sure what the deal was. But the bottom line is, I don't think they're doing well. But we were talking about one of the guys that's on the committee and on the Drug Coalition. I was talking to him yesterday a little bit. And, you know, he was talking about the state of kids in this valley. You know, with the Drug Coalition, most of us think, what do we do after Elaine died? Oh, Molly. We gotta get rid of Molly, because that's the problem, right? Because that's a really dangerous drug. Look what it killed him, you know? Or we gotta get rid of methamphetamine, because methamphetamine is a really bad drug, and it's really addictive, and we gotta do something about it. Or we gotta get rid of this. There's a side of it that it ain't about the... No, there's not a side of it. It ain't about the drug. Okay? And fixing the problem is not about the drug. In some ways, the drugs are somewhat self-correcting. You know, there's not to say that people aren't destroyed in the process. Okay? But these, you know, you see kids die from doing Molly, kids are going to find something else. You see kids die from doing meth and going bad. You know, your big brother's a meth head, not likely to follow directly in his footsteps. But what is the problem? What is the problem? Mom and dad, you go to, you know, anywhere they go, in order to enjoy themselves and have fun, do what? Gotta have a drink, you know? Well, we don't have to, but we just want to. So, what do mom and dad display to a child? So mom and parents in this valley say what all the time? Oh, we need to teach our children to drink responsibly. Really? A 15-year-old is going to drink responsibly? How many of us have seen that? Yeah, I don't think so. Okay? I mean, in a sense, why wouldn't you? It would be kind of like, we need to teach our kid to drive responsibly. Put the 15-year-old in the Bugatti. How is that going to go? Okay? 1,000 horsepower. Oh, but he'll be responsible for standing on the gas. Oh, really? Why would you? You know? Why would you? You know, and it's no different in alcohol. You know, I'm going down this state. You know, it's like being on a, you know, on a ride at the thrill park, you know? I mean, you want it to slow down? You know, what 15-year-old doesn't say, speed it up? Let's do this, man. This is, wow, I've got an adrenaline rush going. This is a wild deal. Teaching a child, it's a stupid thing. That's parents' excuse for wanting to drink themselves. What's a stumbling block? It's a parent. This valley is absolutely full of stumbling blocks. So a child, a parent projects, is a stumbling block because he says, in order for us to relax and have fun and enjoy ourselves at the party, we just drink responsibly, right? I mean, that, you know, in this valley, it's, we just smoke a little bit of pot, you know? We just do it in moderation and responsibly. But basically, you can't really get through life without doing that. And you certainly can't have fun, and you can't relax, and you can't do it. So what is the mentality the child's told? You know, you yell at your child, can't you have fun without getting drunk? Well, I don't know, Mom, you taught me different. You know? You taught me different than that. You know, every time you want to relax, what do? And I don't care what you say. The important thing as parents that you never need to lose sight, it ain't about what you say. It's about what you do. You know, you can say all the right things. That might be worth 10% of the instruction for the kid. It's about how you live. It's about what you model. It's about the value system that you project with your life. Oh, life isn't about money, is you're consumed in your job. You know? It doesn't matter. It's how you live your life. Okay? So you live your life that way. Is that a stumbling block? That's a stumbling block. What is it in that's a stumbling block to a kid by modeling something which is a wrong value? In religion, I mean, Jesus is speaking to religious people. He's speaking to religious parents. He's speaking to those parents. You know, what, I tell you what, talk about a millstone. I mean, we lived in a generation of people driving, fighting to get ready to go to church and get in the car and everybody's got to be ready and you're mad and your parents are uptight and all the way there, mom and dad are in each other's, not at each other and doing it, and you walk in the church door and go, hi, praise Jesus, hi. Yeah, it's so good to see you. It's so good to be here. What's that child think? You're full of it, you know? And your relationship with God is hypocrisy. You know? And is that a stumbling block? That's exactly the stumbling kind of, that's a stumbling block, okay? Because your child is taught, submission to God isn't what it's really about. It's really about how you were exalted, how your relationship with God is exalted by people. Your validity in your relationship with God is really characterized by how people acknowledge that and how people exalt you and how people say your relationship is with God. It's really not about in the quietness or privacy of your life in your home. God is the most important thing. A relationship with God is the most important thing. And a kid sees, how much time does he spend pursuing God? How much time does he spend seeking who God is? How much time does he spend talking to his God in prayer? Because it doesn't matter what you say. You can say it's the most important value in your life. What does he do with their life? How much time does he spend there? If you say with your mouth, it's the most important thing you can do is your relationship with God, and then your life shows other than that, you're a stumbling block. You're a stumbling block because you're teaching a value system to that child, which is not correct. What you said with your mouth was true. But you're teaching a value system that is a stumbling block. Jesus said, that does not go well. In that vulnerability of being a child with trusting your dad, you are going to have people that wrong you. You are going to live in a world full of people that are willing to wrong you. In a family dynamic, You know, I wanted to express, Jeremy and I talked some about this, because I know Beck and him were talking about it. Last week I mentioned something briefly. In verse 15 it says, if your brother sins, go and reprove him in private. And if he listens to you, you have won your brother. But if he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you, so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every fact may be confirmed. And if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax gatherer. That is a mouthful, okay? That's a bunch. And again, that is what we hold up as a model of, quote, what we call church discipline, okay? And I think, sadly, I mean, it would be better for all of us, because we can very much understand dynamics of children. Unfortunately, most of us poorly, right? He's talking about if your brother sins against you. So let's talk about legitimately. We were talking about it with Jeremy and Becca. We were talking about it when I was talking with Jeremy about the boys, okay? The boys. What if, so mom and dad say, do not play with the TV controller. I don't know, I'm just making this up, okay? Do not play with the TV controller. So, Benaiah walks in and Justice is playing with a TV controller. What are we supposed to be teaching our children? How are we supposed to be teaching this is supposed to look, okay? Because unfortunately, most of us grew up, most children grow up with a very bad teaching about how this is supposed to look, okay? What is the dynamic typically? You know. You're trying to parent a bunch of little kids right now doing it, okay? What is typically what happens? So Benaiah goes, Justice, mom and dad said, you're not supposed to play. Well, number one, we're taught and taught wrongly. Benaiah probably sins also, okay? Right off the get-go, because what's Benaiah do? You're not supposed to play with that! Is that a loving response? Should that be the way he does respond? Now we teach this. So I'm speaking to you parents, and I'm speaking to us to try to correct, because we're all conditioned that way growing up. Because probably Benaiah's response is, you're not supposed to play with that. Wrong, sin. What's Jesse's response? You're not my dad. Right? Sin, wrong. Okay? And it doesn't get better, right? It doesn't go the way God told it to be. You say, well, this, no, we are supposed to teach our children. What should we teach our children here? That if Benaiah is speaking the authority of his parents, okay? That holds weight. Because what happens usually, by that time you come in here and the two of them are going, fighting, doing this, right? And what's mom and dad do? Stop fighting! You two stop it right now! You knock it off and go! Corrected? Taught? No. Stop the conflict, stop the wildness, stop the madness. Yeah, understandable. Moms certainly get in that mode of survival. When the kids are all day doing, okay? What's the right thing? And I just encourage you to think about it. We should be teaching what it looks like to function in the family of God, okay? So, because as adults, you know what we do? It looks very similar to what I just described. Who are you to tell me? Who are you to speak into my life? Who are you to correct and reprove me? Look at you! You think you're perfect? We do the same thing when we were taught from this big. We act the same way, and it's sinful, and it's wrong. Okay? We should see, when Benaiah, and I'm using this as an example, if he was speaking the authority of his father, what is bound in heaven shall be bound in earth. What is loose in heaven will be loose in earth, is what he says, okay? And that should hold true. Dad's rules, mom, dad's rules, the house rules are the house rules. Okay? You know, and what would be the right thing? I mean, and I know this sounds somewhat utopic, okay? But let me just say that if we realize our objective and what we're trying to do, maybe we would act better as adults, right? If when Benaiah went to him and said, "You're not supposed to play with the remote," Justice went, "Oh crap, that is what Dad said, isn't it?" Now, this isn't a matter of Benaiah coming in his authority, any more than me coming in my authority. We're supposed to be functioning in the authority of God, in the authority of our Father. And the right response of Justice is to go, "Oh, okay, thank you." Good. And Benaiah's response should be, "I don't want you to get your butt kicked, and you're going to get your butt kicked for being wrong, so I'm going to try to help you here and say, you shouldn't be playing with that, because Dad's going to kick your fanny if you do that. Because you fear your Father." Okay? And that, and now what? What does it say? It says, if you go to your brother, if your brother sins, go and reprove him in private. If he listens to you, you have what? You've won your brother. Let's go do something else. Okay? This is good. We're both out of trouble. We're right with Dad, life's good. Let's go do this. Okay? Utopic? Impossible? Yeah. You're a nanny of kids that don't raise that way. I mean, Becky's laughing, going, you know, I see you're laughing, Kelsey, doing it. I mean, it's just, you know, if you're not a parent and going, "Oh wow," then you're not listening. Because that's a different world, but that's what it's supposed to be. And what happens if Justice goes, because what's Justice's heart? If Benaiah rightly says, "Dad said not to do that." Okay? Not being a smart aleck, because he should be reproved too. If he acts unlovingly and comes in and acts, speaks wrongly, speaks unlovingly, acts unlovingly towards him, he's just as wrong. Because that's an absolute in the house too, right? Right? I mean, that's an absolute in a right house. You're not allowed to speak that way, to act that way. We're talking about long ways down the road for kids who have never been raised this way. But that would be the purpose, because this is how we're supposed to act as adults. This is what we are supposed to do as a church family. No wonder we're dysfunctional. We don't have any idea what it looks like. Okay? Because we were raised so different in that. And when Benaiah goes, "Dad said not to play with that. Says you shouldn't do it." And Justice goes, "You're not my dad. Go away." Because that's how he's always gotten away with it. That's how he's always ended it. That's how just like we do in the church, right? So we don't speak to each other. Why would we want to say somebody when we see him in sin? "Because your dad said not to do that. And it won't go well. This will not be good in your life. You know, and I care about you. And I want you to be right with your dad." When you go, "You're not my boss. Who are you? You know, you're not my mom. You're not my dad." What's to be our response? "Well, so you?" No. We're not to sin. Okay? What should be my response? "Man, I really do care about you." That's what should be Benaiah's response. Maybe it's, "Mom, you know, Justice is playing with the controller and I told him it's not a good idea, so let's get it." Mom goes in there. "Justice, are you playing with the controller?" "Yeah, you're right. You need to learn that when your brother reminds you to do this, you need to learn that this is a good thing. You need to learn to act this way. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have been playing with the controller." Okay, right response in the second time. He goes, "Well, he's not my dad, he's not my mother, he's not supposed to do this and act like that." I don't want to stratify dad intervening, mom intervening, but I'm pretty big on corporal punishment is typically best done by dads. I mean, I'm not saying moms don't spank, I don't know, but I think it's better that way. At this point, doing it, and moms, because moms sin against their children. Moms do the same thing. "I'm going to tell Dad on you if you don't do grip mine." Okay, mine. Okay. Well, Mom, did you just sin against your kid? Oh yeah, you did. Right? It will happen, Richard. By the way, Don't be thinking the idyllic parent right here with the idyllic little child right here. It ain't going to happen. It's going to happen, okay? Mom sin against their children as much as, and mom, talk about a stumbling block. When a mom loses her mind and, you know, does this, oh man, I mean, I saw it yesterday, driving out Warm Springs, and I'm driving, and there's this group of mom and about three or four kids on bicycles right there, and they're pulled off side of the road, and I'm wondering, are you all right? And when they all go, smile as they go by, and I go, I wonder what's wrong there. And I look in my rearview mirror, and mom's going, screaming. The kids are going, mom's just losing her mind, you know, about something. I don't know what, you know, but I almost went back, thought, those kids are about in danger doing it. But mom was just losing, I mean, bah, 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 bah. Oh my gosh, man. She's mad. You know, lost her mind on this thing. Moms have no right to sin, to be a stumbling block to their children. You know, you're supposed to control your anger. You're not supposed to lose your thing. You're supposed to be obedient to your dad, and mom's screaming and yelling. Bad idea. Okay? Stumbling block to your children doing that. And if it doesn't happen, then corporal punishment happens, basically. Okay? You know, is that we reject you? We push you away? I mean, it says is, and if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let it be to you as a Gentile and a tax gatherer. What does that mean? You know? That means we're supposed to go, get out of here. We don't like you. What is he, did he say to do that to anybody? Or does he say we're supposed to love our enemies? Pray for those who persecute you. Be compassionate towards your enemies. Be loving towards your enemies. Care about them more than you care about yourself. That isn't rejection. Okay? It isn't rejection. But it's dealing severely. It's dealing severely because we do love you. Just spanking. Okay? We talked about a lot. Any parent that finds some satisfaction in spanking their kid because they're mad is a sick and evil, wicked parent. Okay? Should they spank their kid to the point where it hurts? Absolutely. Necessary. Okay? But it should make you cry also. It should cause you the same pain, more pain than it causes them in that need. The same as putting them out of the church. Right? It doesn't say you reject him as a person. In another place it says, well, that's about as cute as it gets. In the same place it says, do not eat with them, right? In another place, right? What it means is do not participate in the love feast. What is the love feast? The love feast is the intimate fellowship of believers. Where we are believers, we are all submissive to God and the intimate fellowship of believers. Don't treat them like a believer. Treat them like a Gentile. Do not say, oh, it's okay. Say, no, you're rebellious. You're rebellious against our dad. And you need a spanking. Hopefully for the restoration of your soul. I mean, it's no different than, I mean, spanking should be a hard, difficult, tough thing to do. Never a threat, never a retaliation, but a painful, hard, difficult thing to do. Just like it's a painful, hard, difficult thing to you. We don't throw you out the door and say, get out of here. You say, man, we love you enough. And it isn't a matter of throwing out the door. It's a matter of saying, it isn't even a matter of saying, you can't hang out with us or we're not going to hang out with you. Okay? It's a matter of saying, don't believe you're born again. We're to treat you like a Gentile. A Gentile say, are they the children of God? Are they the children of Israel? No. That's what a Gentile means. Those other than the children of God. Okay? Those other than the children of God. In a tax gatherer, were they supposed to love the tax gatherers? Yeah. Did they like him very much? No. We don't like him either much. Okay? IRS is not nice. Okay? And they didn't like them any better than the IRS, let me tell you. Especially, they were their own. You know, they were their own and they were collecting taxes for Rome. And that was a tough deal. Tough pill to swallow. How are they supposed to respond to him? Even though I do not like what you're doing, even though it is a tough one for me, even though it's causing oppression to me, even though how you're acting is causing my life to be more difficult, I'm going to love you anyway. I'm going to care about you anyway. You're not saved. You're not born again. It says treat you as a Gentile, something other than the family of God. I guess to me, when we talk about, because I can tell you, in trying to deal with people and dealing with counseling, in the last, 4 or 5 years, it's been one of the most difficult things to overcome is people who have not had a family and a daddy that loved them in this way. It's profoundly tough. It's profoundly tough to get over. And when it comes in applying it to teaching little children, I mean, even you guys is trying to be nannies. I mean, it's a tough one, man. It's a tough one. Because you don't have this understanding in any way or even desire to understand by the actual parents. And so how do you teach truth? How do you still try to prepare this child to be a participant in the family of God at some point in their life? Because that's our hope, right? To be in the right relationship with God. That better be your primary purpose. Is not just survival, But sometimes I know it feels like survival, especially it's an extremely difficult situation to be in. But our purpose and our objective for whether it's nannying, whether it's being a parent, whether it's looking forward to what it looks like to being a parent, whether it's having been parented and trying to deal with the fact of why do I respond to criticism so poorly? Why do I respond to reproof and correction so poorly? Why do I not see somebody loving me when they say, do you know how God feels about this? Do you know what God says about this? This is what the Word says about that, about this aspect of your life. Why do I find that so difficult? Who are you to tell me? Well, I spent my whole life doing that, In understanding that and going, that was not good. That was not right. That was not balanced. That was siblings not acting like they're supposed to act. A family not acting like it's supposed to act. Because a family who loves each other is going to go, do you want to get a spanking from God? Oh, no, I don't. Okay? Thank you. And if we don't, most of us don't have that baseline, so we better get it. We better get it if we're going to be transformed, be converted back to children and acting correctly as children in God's family, with a perfect father. And why does he do that? Because he wants our family to be healthy. Because he wants our family to be happy. Because he wants our family to be loving. Because he wants us to have the security, the hope, the blessing of a family and what that looks like. Again, this is the family. The family of God is the family that really matters. That is the family that really matters. It's not blood family. Blood family is how God oriented and set up this world in order to get us, to teach us how to function in the family of God. To prepare us to be part of the family of God. Because that's the eternal family. That's the enduring family. That's the family that lasts. That's the family that matters. And that's the family that we're being prepared for. And to the degree that we've been failed and I failed my children, is a father to prepare them correctly? Okay? The parents all stumbled. Somehow, God didn't work it out that we get to have a trial run first and then throw that one away. Okay? Unfortunately, they have to bear the brunt of my failures. Okay? They have to bear the brunt of my stumbling and bumbling and selfishness as a father. My primary failing, the predominance of my failing came from my utter failing and sinfulness. My other, it wasn't just I didn't know. I didn't care. I cared about me. Let's pray.
God, I thank you that you care about the family. You know, it's amazing how even within the Christian culture, we look and say, you know, well, it doesn't tell us much about raising kids. Really? The whole book's about kids and parents. About kids and their dad. The whole book's about you modeling being a father. And a mother and father are one flesh. I don't diminish that or exalt one over the other. There's not one of greater importance. But the book's full of it, and how we're to act as children in response to you, our Father. And how wrong reactions look, and how right reactions look. What correction looks like. God causes us to understand that, so we will train, so that we will retrain our own minds, and our own lives, and our own perceptions, and our own responses. We'll quit justifying wrong responses. And how we will realize the incredible importance of modeling your family and what it's supposed to look like to our children, to the ones that we're held responsible to and accountable to and for, and not just survive. God, I thank you. You've given us the book. I thank you. You've given us your Spirit to lead us and guide us. I thank you that we can go, I don't know what to do, and I'm being overwhelmed by my emotions, and God, please take the wheel. And you do, because you do love us. And you want us to be right with you and others. Teach us to love. Thank you for giving us the ability to love. Thank you for giving us the ability to be selfless because of Jesus. Amen.